It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strangehamps. And today we're celebrating Mother's Day with a collection of stories from our archives by and about moms. Stories about care and about courage, about the work of mothering.
We moved into the homeless shelter when she was 7 or 8 months.
Here's writer Stephanie Land.
She started walking on her first birthday or the day before. And we moved out of the homeless shelter the day after her first birthday. Given the environment, it was drab and a little sad and disappointing, but it's still amazing to watch your child reach that milestone. I don't know, looking back at it now, I can appreciate it a lot more. Even though we were in this environment, we were still kind of learning how to move forward with our lives, and things were happening, even though I felt like I had absolutely nothing. You know, I mean, for her, it was just life, and it was great to her. I mean, she had me, and she had a few toys, and I felt like I wasn't giving her enough, or I wasn't enough several times a day. But looking back, I can see that she was just fine.
Stephanie Land's memoir about life as a single mom is called Made: Hard Work, Low Pay, and a Mother's Will to Survive. It is a pretty unflinching look at the kind of double standards we have for mothers, about what it's like to clean other women's houses when you're barely making enough to keep your own child alive. The book came out in 2019, and it changed Stephanie Land and her daughter's lives. First, it was a bestseller. Then it was the basis for a Netflix series, also called Made. But when Shannon Henry Kleiber talked with her, all that was still ahead, and the book was barely a week old.
You write about being overwhelmed by two things, motherhood and poverty. These are two experiences that have changed you so much. How did they both change your life, and are they so intertwined?
Wow. I think they're both pretty all-encompassing in different ways. The motherhood, of course, you're constantly worried about your child, just making sure that they're okay. I'm thinking about them constantly. Poverty was kind of the same way. I couldn't go to a grocery store without first budgeting. I had a tally in my mind almost constantly of what bills had been paid, what check was about to go through, how much money would that leave me, so can I buy a new dish sponge? And there was just a somewhat constant taking care of my financial situation as much as taking care of my daughter.
Yeah, I can see how they're different things, but they are all encompassing. You're always thinking about them. I don't know any mother who doesn't feel the difficulties of being pulled between kids and work. And it's so much harder on single moms and those who are barely making enough to live. How do you work with that constant pulling?
Oh, boy. Well, a lot of it is just, it's not necessarily working with it. It's just doing the work. And you have to show up for the work. You don't have a choice in the matter because you're the only one. I think there was a lot of lack in thinking about the future. Thinking about the future was kind of depressing. I didn't want to think about that we were going to be in that situation for years and years. And so the short-sightedness, I think, allowed me to appreciate the little moments a little bit more. Time slowed down a lot in a good way. And I was able to be really present with my daughter and just focus on the good moment or the good environment or the little things that came to us that meant so much, I think we're appreciated a lot more. Like now it's, I rush through the day a lot more. I depend on television or tablets. I feel like I am not as present for my kids now as I was then.
Hmm.
But then it was just like that was all I had to give.
How do you mean you were more present? That's really interesting.
Imagine living in a 300 square foot apartment with a 3-year-old who was very energetic and very well-spoken and smart. I was constantly trying to come up with ways to keep her occupied and keep her busy. And we were kind of all up in each other's business all the time. And so I think there were just more opportunities for connection, and there was more opportunities for us to have moments together.
It's interesting when you look back at those times and you think, okay, she had a few things and that's all she needed. We were kind of happy. We had this and we didn't need that. And then you went to go clean people's houses and they had so many physical objects that needed to be cleaned and needed to be organized. And you saw that was a little overwhelming too.
Yeah, yeah. What struck me the most was cleaning entire rooms. I mean, rooms that were as big as the space that we lived in that never got used. They were just like spare rooms. And those were the types of things that I couldn't understand, especially because I struggled so hard to pay for the space that I lived in. I couldn't imagine just having the same amount of space just hanging out and not get used at all. And then paying someone to take care of it and clean it.
So as a mother, sometimes I think mothers are almost superhuman when they need to be. We figure it out. You think that you can't do it, and then it just happens. Did motherhood drive you to do what you needed to do out of necessity and love?
Oh, most definitely. Not only did it drive me, it centered me. I mean, it was, I don't know if it made me feel small, but it definitely gave everything that I did a much bigger meaning. It wasn't about me at all anymore. Everything I did was about Mia for several years. And then now I have two kids and it's about both of them, but it still is kind of for Mia, because she's been with me since the beginning and I've brought her through so much that it still kind of feels that way. A lot of what I do is to show her that she can do the same.
And I also think it seems like from the mom artists I know, writers and visual artists, there's sometimes some kind of guilt of people saying, well, you should get a regular job. You should get a job that pays more. How is this working for you where you've now become a successful writer? And did you ever feel like, okay, I really need to spend this amount of time on it and tell people this is my regular job. This is what I do.
I still feel like I'm trying to convince myself that this is my regular job. It's been a long, long journey full of imposter syndrome and doubt and questioning myself and my decisions. As a single parent, you're told to work as hard as you can to get to the point where you're a contributing member of society and you're, you know, you have the regular job with the regular paychecks and the health insurance and everything that that brings. To branch off and be a freelance writer was incredibly risky, but at the time I had just invested $50,000 into a college education for a degree in English.
I have one of those too, a degree in English. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm told they're common.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, it was just, I put my diploma on the wall and that was like my beacon of stubbornness to make that thing worth as much as I possibly could instead of just preventing me from one day owning a house.
The maid hours, in some ways, they were set. They were not very flexible, but you would go and you would do it and you'd come home and it would be done. The same way you would work in the barn. You described all of like working with the hay in the barn. And as a writer, it is kind of, it's different where you need to set your own hours, and that flexibility can be good, but you also have to be really on top of your own independence with that.
Well, that was a lot of the reason why it worked out for me in the beginning. I mean, I graduated college and then had a baby on my own just a month afterwards, and I needed a job that I could do basically at all hours of the day or just whenever she was sleeping. So those first couple of years of freelancing, I did that way. I did most of my work after the kids went to bed until like 2 or 3 in the morning.
Yeah, I think that there's this untapped energy of mothers all across our country who could be working while they're up at night. I sometimes think about that as I've been a freelance writer for a long time too. And
yeah, it's a lot of
is the way it worked.
It's a lot of madness,
right.
figuring out what your job is exactly and trying to describe it to people and trying to explain why you're answering emails at 6 o'clock in the morning when you're still in bed.
Right.
It's a job that never really stops or sleeps, it seems like.
What do you hope for them, for your daughters, as they eventually find work? Do you think about the idea of finding your passion? Is that something that's a good idea or even realistic? What do you hope for them?
Well, I hope they don't feel limited in any way, but I also hope that they work both sides of the spectrum. I wouldn't want them to not experience what it's like to be a waitress or someone who is in the retail department or someone who has a job in customer service. I think everybody should work a job in customer service. So at least like do some of their time doing that, getting them through college, or I don't know. I just hope that they feel like they can do what they want to do, whatever that is. I mean, Mia wants to be an astronaut, and I encourage her on a daily basis to do that.
Yeah, and you did try to make things really special for her. You had things about keeping schedules, and you had your rituals.
Yeah, I heard some kind of discussion by John Gottman, I think it was, when she was 3 or 4 months old or really young, and it said as long as they have one stable person in their life, one primary caregiver that is predictable and always shows up whenever they say that they are, then the rest of their life will be chaos, but they'll at least have that one person who is like a lighthouse or a pinnacle point, which will kind of keep them from living in a constant state of chaos. So I tried to kind of like fall into a place of predictable nature as far as our home life was concerned. Even though we were moving around a lot, I always set things up in the same way or tried to move from start to end completely, like on a weekend that she was at her dad's house. And I would make the environment exactly the same, even though the building we were in was different.
Yeah. So your story, Stephanie, is so evocative about yourself, but it's really the story of so many moms, so many women, so many single moms especially. You've given a voice to single working moms. Do you think it will move beyond you?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, that's why I wrote the book. That's been part of my mission from the beginning, is just to bring into the light the expectations that we put on single parents. We expect them to be two people, both physically, emotionally, and financially. And they're stigmatized in a way that makes, I don't know, when I was a single mom, I felt like I was constantly begging for help in every single aspect. I had someone send me a message recently on Facebook that they said, boy, if I would have realized how much you were struggling at the time, I would have agreed to babysit more often. It's like, well, yeah, like, why aren't you doing that normally?
Yeah.
For me, that's the biggest way you can help a single parent, is just showing up on a regular basis, taking their kids somewhere, giving them a break, but also forming a relationship with their child so that the parent has someone else that they can kind of send their kids to whenever they're having a hard moment or need to talk, or because my daughter could never talk to me about me or about her dad or things like that. And it's been really important to her that she has close relationships with other adults so that she can talk to them about things that she would feel uncomfortable talking to me about.
That's really good advice. So, you know, the way a lot of people say, well, let me know what I can do. And people mean well when they say that, but to be more specific about, hey, can I take your daughter to the movies?
Oh, yeah. It's so huge.
Yeah.
To give them an experience that their parent probably can't really afford to do, either time-wise or financially, to just give the kid a one-on-one focus with another person is enormous. I mean, I oftentimes get so busy that I forget the importance of having the sit down on the floor with them and play or listen about school or whatever it is they're really into. It's easy to just kind of like mill through your day and not do that. It's really important for them to feel like they're connecting with other adults.
And for also the rest of society to see, you know, you mentioned a couple times how people will say something like, you're welcome. And when they see that how you're paying for your groceries or something like that, how can you get people to understand what single working moms, people who need to pay that way, are going through?
I would just ask people to maybe imagine themselves in the same spot and having to fill out packets and packets of applications and prove that you're working and what your rent is and your utilities. It's an air of distrust when you're applying for government assistance and just within the system itself. I'm not even speaking to the general consensus of it, people taking advantage. And it's degrading and it's humiliating. And then to actually buy groceries with an EBT card and use it in that visible way so that everybody knows around you, or it feels like everybody knows around you, that you can't afford to provide bread and whatever necessities for your kids. It's incredibly embarrassing. And I don't know if it's changed much recently or if it's still the same. I fortunately haven't been on government assistance for a few years now. So, but I can imagine it still is.
Tell me about having fun with your girls. What do you like to do? And I know as a parent, sometimes you're just so focused on school and work and life, and you look up and you think, okay, we've got to just have fun today or just be silly. Or what do you do?
Well, Missoula's pretty great. I mean, you can drive 20 minutes in any direction and you're on a river in the middle of nowhere, it feels like. And you can just kind of have a day doing that.
That was Stephanie Land, author of Made, talking with Shannon Henry Kleiber back in 2019. Land's child now goes by her middle name, Story, and Land herself is at work on another memoir called Class.